the Artist Coaching Podcast. And this time we have another special guest. It's Danik again.
Yes.
Ralph had to go somewhere else last minute. So unfortunately, he won't be joining today. And Jay as well.
Okay.
Jay will be back next week. And then we have another special guest from The Him. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The Him, I've never heard of him, but we'll see. So today it's just us, but that's okay because I've got a few questions from the community that I wanted to ask you.
Let's go.
First of all, I saw something on your Instagram about Funk Radio, that it's returning.
Yeah, it's finally back.
And that's like, what's it going to be?
It's back in a monthly concept, so I was struggling to, you know, a lot of people were actually wanting it back, and then I looked up on my YouTube stats and somehow the old episodes all got a lot of views in the recent months. I think people were finally catching up to everything, because if you do it on a weekly base, then it's also hard for me to keep up with the quality.
Did you used to do it weekly?
Weekly. Yeah. And of course I could film my shows every week, but if you want to bring something extra and something unique, or maybe squeeze in a bunch of unreleased stuff as well, then a monthly mix makes way more sense. And I think it also adds value for the fans, because they have something to look up, to look forward to, because I'm aiming to bring something new every time. If it's a bootleg or mashup or just totally unreleased music, something out of the ordinary. Also for this one, there's almost no rules, because my old radio show, we had a lot of syndication, so a lot of radio stations were playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that also means like you have to fit in a certain genre, because they choose your radio show over, you know, 20 other radio shows. And usually that's because they have a different lineup also in genre. So genre-wise, is, you know, my show was a little bit more groovy, and then maybe David Guetta is a little bit more main stage, and et cetera, et cetera. So, but for me now, I was like, okay, if I do a monthly show, it's going to be no rules, as long as it's good energy, good music, obviously. If it fits my sets or just fits the community, the funk sound in general, of course. But also it could be that I could play dubstep or something that I really like. So
I think it's more about you than like you personally, what you like.
No, not at all. Of course, it's still somehow my my project, of course. But I wanted to have it more like a community show. So we're launching a lot of features also for fan engagement and interaction, so people can actually have their track on the show. Also vote for certain tracks. That's all coming. Also Discord exclusive listening parties, all that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Because I think that's what was that was lacking in the last show that I had.
How long has it been gone?
I just released it, so we just started January.
When did you stop doing it for a while?
Yeah, I stopped doing it for a while. So the last episode was episode 300, and that was, I have to look it up, maybe 1.5 years ago.
Oh, okay, so it's been gone for a long while.
Yeah, because at the time I was also, I had a conversation with Kreider, who had a really popular show, of course. And he told me his story, why he quit. He's like, I want to focus more on the streaming side, so playlisting, all that kind of stuff. And he said, like, yeah, of course, I don't think a lot of people know that, but having a radio show is also pretty, it's a pretty big investment.
It's a lot of time.
If you do it the way I did it. So it's, I obviously curate everything, but I have someone that does all the content, the mixing itself, writes a script for me, etc.
Yeah.
So there's a whole company involved in that. And I also do all the syndication and have all the contacts with the radio stations. So, keeps me focused on my music, of course. It's like a management thing. It's a service.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and then it's like, okay, well, if you have that monthly fee, what can I do else with that? Now, for example, for Kreider, I want to invest that in playlisting or just in general in or for ads for my music or promotion for my music. And I was like, I could see that the radio show was still doing good, but it was always like yeah, the same level for almost a couple of years, of course. So I was like, I also wanted to invest more in content for social media and other content. So releases, Funk, the label itself. So it was, that was kind of the choice.
Yeah. I had. There was also a time where just everyone had their radio show, you know, so it's hard to stand out.
Also, it's just a matter of focus also and priorities. But I think in a monthly format makes more sense. It makes more, at least for me.
It's more focused on quality than quantity.
Yeah.
True. Cool. Well, nice that it's coming back.
Yeah.
Have you also heard about the fact that Universal put out all of their music on TikTok?
Yeah, crazy. I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about it?
Well, I think it's part of the music business. There's a lot of ego also involved. But in this case, these are like the biggest players in the game. Of course, TikTok is having a lot of the cake, I think, in terms of licensing and copyrights and all that stuff. And a lot of people are listening to music or even exploring music on TikTok. So for them, it's a good business. And I think, I don't know exactly what was the problem with Universal, I think.
I think it was a money
loyalty
thing,
right?
Always.
Wise, right?
Yeah, it's a money thing. Like how much
it's always about money, right?
It's always about how much they pay to use the music on that platform.
Yeah, but I think it's, I don't know if it's smart. I mean, it's a big gamble for them because obviously it's a major cut from, I think, all the royalties that they exploit. So. Yeah, let's wait and see. But
yeah, what about an artist? Like, if you're signed there and your track became a hit because of TikTok, and you get a lot of income because of TikTok. And
well, that's the issue. Usually, the artist benefits more because, you know, you have the income from shows or sponsorships or whatever that comes from the popularity that you gain through a TikTok viral hit. But for Universal, because they're the label or the major, they only make music. Usually make a lot of money on the music side, of course, and of course depending on the contract that they have with the artist, because sometimes they even get a cut from the shows, but that's not all the time. So yeah, for them it makes sense to play it this hard legal wise.
Yeah, but it sucks pretty hard if you're the one who's having a hit.
No, 100%. Yeah,
and you have nothing to say. You know, the label will decide for you.
But in the end, it's always. That's why I like being independent as well. Of course, in the beginning, a major can do a lot for you, but in the end, it's still about about balance. I think not totally selling your soul to a major label, because I also know a lot of EDM artists that were stuck to a certain label because they were like, okay, this label was offering their contracts for like say 30 tracks.
Yeah,
and if you the issue is like, okay, I can make 30 tracks in a week, for instance, but they also have to accept it and approve it.
Yeah,
and for one artist, he had like I think it was 6 songs left that he should put out on that label, and I think it was like almost like a war between them because they were not even approving anything anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Although it was maybe a good track or whatever, but it was like it
became a principle.
It became annoying, of course, and then you're stuck, and then you're fucked, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But that's all. That also doesn't seem to happen that much anymore.
Like, no,
back in the days, it was pretty casual that you signed 5 to 10 tracks.
Yeah,
but these days, just less, I think.
Because the landscape is evolving, is changing, so it doesn't make that much sense anymore. You see a lot of people even self-releasing and having big success with it. I think Tujam was one of the guys that just posted something about his first self-release track, and he did like 44 million only on Spotify.
With his own self-release
track? Yeah, with his self-release track, yeah. That's pretty big.
What do you say? You make approximately 3,500 euros on.
Yeah, that was the first years, but right now it's even less. But it's still a decent amount of money. Yeah, you can make.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, like if you self-release it, you still have to go through a certain app or provider, of course.
But those are pretty cheap. You just pay.
They're super cheap. Exactly. Yeah. I was just gonna say the percentages are way different than what a label.
It's not even a percentage. It's like $10 a flat fee for a year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well, that makes sense. Then. Yeah.
But that's all good.
That's great.
Yeah. Listen, we've got a community on Discord, and I mentioned that you were coming back to the podcast, so I asked people if they wanted to ask you any questions, because last time we didn't really came to that. We went into some good conversations with Ralph.
Yeah, we had. It was fun, though.
Yeah, that was definitely fun. Yeah. But we do have some questions for now. So we're just we're taking out three of them.
Yeah, go ahead.
One was pretty funny because I remember that as well. It goes way back. It's from Joost. He said, "I saw the Funkadelic van on the highway." the other week.
Yeah.
It made me think of how Danik evolved from Funkadelic, running around with his own sound and DJ gear, doing all kinds of events to become Danik. What changed? Was it starting producing? What was the most important factor in the evolution?
Yeah, that's a good question. So yeah,
First have to explain what Funkadelic is.
Yeah, okay. So let me explain this in like as briefly as possible. So yeah. I started as a DJ, as DJ Dan is my real name. Playing open format all round music in local bars here in Breda, in my hometown in the Netherlands, and that evolved from people that heard me play there and they want me to play on their own party, or even corporate events or sporting events, everything. So I bought my first van from the money that I got from DJing. And I had a friend of mine who had a lot of equipment, so speakers, all that stuff. So what I did is, like, during the weekends, I did also weddings. So for instance, somebody booked me for a wedding, and then I went to my friend and filled up my whole van with equipment, went to the wedding party like a few hours before, built everything from scratch and played there. So it was like my own drive-in show, basically.
Yeah.
And then I started doing also like DJ management. So I was doing the DJ schedule for all the bars and clubs here in Breda.
Oh.
That was a lot of fun. And also that was a good way for me to not only, because I could only play, you know, three times in a weekend, maybe two times even. So now I had more people to choose from and to also, book other guys for me. And that was great. And that evolved, and then that became Mas Musica. That was my first company, together with two friends of mine. One of those is Servi is like 10 years older than me. He's like, I think, for me, the best DJ that I know, technically. And he also taught me how to mix, you know, from Michael Jackson to 50 Cent and, you know, everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, that's more normalized because, you know, the equipment is much better and you see more people on YouTube even explaining it, or James Hype, all that kind of stuff. But back in the days, that was totally new because everyone came from vinyl and then CDs, but no one was really using the loops or anything, or at least not at that pace.
Yeah.
So that was fun. And then, of course, I started also there was a club opening in Breda, or like a restaurant. And then after 10, they removed all the furniture and then it became a club. Or at least they wanted more house music. So I started playing there as well. And then I started making my own edits, mashups, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And from making mashups, and then I also... I got to know Robert Hardwell in Jans, Café Jansen in a bar. And then you had Amazon Messenger. And we were on Amazon Messenger every night, every day, maybe 12 hours a day. And just, you know, sending each other mashups and ideas. And he was already producing a lot.
Like, he was already doing stuff. Bubbling beats and stuff.
Yeah, bubbling beats. Yeah. And at the time, he was also making more. Yeah, the housey stuff. I think the all the tracks that he did on Tool Room. Flamingo, like even. He released on Flamingo as well.
Yeah.
So that was a good time. And then he basically inspired me to also, you know, start producing my own tracks. And of course, I started with making bootlegs because that was the most easy part for me because, you know, you get more inspired by just using an a cappella and then build a track around it.
Yeah. I think and you could play it around yourself.
Yeah, and that's still... a concept that I use a lot in my recent productions as well, just by thinking of like, okay, I want to make a bootleg or something, and then you just remove the, you know, the parts from the original track, and then you're left with something totally original. Could is also an option.
But, yeah, true.
But anyways, and then of course, yeah, so then I started making my own music. Then there was this DJ contest for Dance Tour, which was like an upcoming festival here in the Netherlands, which was free entry. Was meant for, yeah, basically a younger crowd to get in touch with dance music in the Netherlands. And they had parties here in Breda, all the major cities like Utrecht and I don't know, like
Tilburg.
Tilburg even, major cities. It was all over the place.
Yeah.
And they did DJ contest. So next to their lineup, at that time was like also Funkerman, I think, and now big Fedder. DJs and Gregor Salto,
Afrojack.
And Party Squad. And I won that DJ contest, and that gained me a spot to play 30 minutes of actually open the festival in Breda. So I was super nervous. I was like preparing my set in my home studio like every day, like testing and making all the transitions, and then I played there for 30 minutes, but like it just opened, so it was like literally people were still building the whole site, and there were like maybe 10 people and five people were my friends and my mom and my dad and my sister. But for me that was like, okay, damn, this is sick. I want to become better at it and make my own music, because that's the first time I played my own music. Not 30 minutes, but I had like two tracks for myself.
Well, wasn't that scary?
It was super scary. Yeah. It was really scary. But it was so much fun, because the excitement that I got from playing my own track that I made on my computer, that was the most exciting part. And then I was like, yeah, maybe I should stick to that. And then I was like, yeah, DJ Dan doesn't sound that cool. And I came up with, because I like a lot of funk and soul music. I still do. I still play that almost every day. And I was like, funkadelic. And I was like, oh, funkadelic. I mean, I was also a fan of Funkerman, of course, and Flamingo and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of inspiration from that.
That's Ralph calling in. Wait, two seconds.
Ralph's back.
Ralph. Wacht. Is that the microphone?
I'm live on.
Oh, wacht. Where is he now?
Hi.
Ralph.
Hey,
yeah. Yeah, zit in de podcast. Ja. Yeah. Kom zomaar, hè? Mooi. Anyway.
Anyway. Yeah. So, yeah. And then, so Funkadelic was born. And I started making my own music as Funkadelic. And then actually the first release on Revealed was Hardwell and Funkadelic.
That's right.
Get Down Girl, which started as a bootleg that I made from ATFC Bad Habit. And Robert liked it so much. He's like, come here. And then we worked in Cubase. We both did. So we opened the project and we changed some stuff. And he actually sang on the track.
It was Get Down Girl.
And girl, get this party started. It's even Nicky Romero made a remix at the time.
I remember.
And that was the first release on Revealed. And then I had an EP also as DJ Funkadelic with Smack. And I don't even know other title. Mm-hmm. And also released it as Brainless together with Boris. A couple of songs. But then came the fact that I also started playing with Robert in some shows, also in Europe, and I think America was calling, but they were all saying like, "Oh, Funkadelic, that's an artist name that we have. That's a 70s band. So you're gonna get in trouble if you want to release music like that, and you know all the patents and copyrights." So I had to change it, and actually that was the best thing that happened to me, because that was right at the start of my career, so I had time to change it. And it was actually a good way of introducing a new artist as well. Of course, I had major help from the fact that I was able to come with Robert on tour. That helped a lot, you know, to put me on the stage and for everyone to see. And then, of course, I had to make it happen. But it was really nice.
Yeah, I think a lot of memories are coming back right now.
Yeah, we had some fun.
Oh yeah, it's like that whole period of the start of Revealed and stuff was just now looking back in hindsight, it's just a weird phase, you know, like it was so, everything was exploding, like everything. It's just that now looking back at it, you kind of realize it, but being in it at the moment, it was like, yeah, you just really didn't realize what was happening.
Definitely a weird time, because before Revealed, everything was very housey, very credible also, like everyone's doing more darker stuff. Yeah. And then Revealed came, and actually that was born because Robert wasn't able to release the music that he wanted to release. So yeah, he made a pretty big gamble.
Yeah,
and it paid off.
And it also, like in my mind, it kind of all became a lot more international from that point. Before that point, we were used to play a lot of gigs in the Netherlands, right? Like you could do 5 shows a week if you wanted to. But from that point, it kind of became more normal to travel.
Yeah.
And right now, it's kind of the standard.
And of course, America also helped a lot because there was the period where Swedish House Mafia was up and coming. And then Leave the World Behind, for example, one of those big tracks.
Yeah, and Get made the bridge with R&B, like Kelly Rowland and stuff.
Yeah, of course, Geta. Yeah. Let's not forget Geta. Yeah. But then it really, really... started.
Yeah, it really blew up.
Yeah, really blew
up. The follow-up question is one about that period, and he was wondering, let's see, he was wondering how your career went from like the highlight, so traveling with Hartwell and stuff, how it transferred to where you are now, like how you saw the music industry changing. Did you see anything change in let's say 2014 to now?
In hindsight, yeah, of course. But at the time, not really. Because I was right in the middle of this crazy few years that, you know, everything was possible. Bookings were flying in. Also, somehow all the music that we made, as you know, that everyone released on Revealed seemed to really hit home.
Yeah.
So for me, that was also the, that's also sometimes hard, you know, because you kind of get in this automated pilot thing where you just go, you're in that roller coaster and you don't look back, you don't look left or right. And of course I started to feel that, my personal taste was changing a little bit. And the amazing thing is that I had the chance also from Robert at the time to actually to grow that, because I was getting a lot of good demos from talents, and I was playing more groovy than he did. Of course, he was more big room, or how do you want to call it, and I also had this big room influence, but I still was longing for that more groovy stuff, and that was kind of what I liked making also. And then I was able to release the Denik EPs on Revealed to showcase also other talents. And that was kind of the first start preamble of funk recordings. And everything was, I always made those decisions together with Robert, always. Because I know that, and he knows that also, like, we started together basically, and I would never forget where I came from and all the opportunities that I got. So this was always something that he also how do you say that?
Gunnen? Supported.
Yeah, he supported majorly, because he also got that support, for example, from Tiësto back in the day.
So. Oh, yeah.
And also even before Tiësto, from Fedde and Fedde Legrand and Funkerman with Flamingo.
I talked about this with Ralph as well, like the importance of having a mentor, you know, like having someone that helps you.
1000%. I think looking back, and also for anyone that is a millionaire or billionaire, if you look up all those videos on YouTube, all those success stories, they all have mentors.
Yeah,
they all have someone that they talk to or. You know, that they talk to and get feedback from, and honest feedback, because that's the problem. When you're so successful in an environment where everyone is doing like this, like, oh, amazing, great, like everyone's saying yes, 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 but your real people are the people that are honest with you or can tell you no, or, you know, that's for me still is really important. Mm-hmm. And I think I can sense that from a distance, yeah, when someone is for real or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, true.
But it, in the end, it helps you. Like, of course, it's not it, coping with feedback or negative feedback is especially when you're in this rush of only success and you're doing big shows and all that kind of stuff. It also does something to your brain. Also read a lot of books about that. What success does to your brain is really, really interesting. Yeah. And when I read that book, it was also my mind was blown because it was so. Yeah, I could really feel it. Like I could, I know what he was talking about. Yeah. It was like I experienced that. So if you know all those kind of things, yeah, it really helps you also get better and evolve.
True,
in my opinion.
The last person had a lot of questions, but I'll just pick a few from them. It's more and more practical, as in regarding the music production side of things. It's more like, how do you start a project? Do you have your own sample bank? Do you work on multiple tracks at once?
Yeah,
that type of questions.
So to answer the question, so for me, there is no there's no like real protocol or something. I used to have my own sample pack, but I ditched it because it also keeps me in a box.
Yeah.
Also creatively, of course, it helps you to distinct your sound a little bit, but I think nowadays it's less important than it was. And I think it you can still hear that it's a Denik track without me using the same samples over and over. I think Splice is amazing. I think, and everyone uses Splice, and you can still be very creative with the same vocal sample that everyone used. But you know, you can, there's so much you can do nowadays to filter it or you know, to modulate it. My negative I said capacity competencies
competence.
Yeah, my negative competence is that I work on too many tracks at the same time because I get bored too soon. So the creative process is always within maybe 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
Yeah, 30 minutes. I have the concept. So maybe just a melody or like a drop idea that I have. I usually record it on my phone.
Beatboxing.
Yeah, no, not beatboxing. No, humming and making weird noises. You don't want to hear it, but
every artist should like release those things less for fun, you know? Like,
yeah, it's so funny, yeah, man.
Just to hear where it started and where it ended.
And I can tell when I'm too stressed, I never get those kind of melodies that pop in my head. But when I'm relaxed, for instance, under the shower or even at night, when you're like about to fall asleep, that's usually the moment when I get like a certain idea in my head.
Do you know why that is?
Yeah, I know why that is, because you're relaxed and you it's like when I say to someone like, hey, you should look for blue cars, everyone sees blue cars. Mm-hmm. But when you're too stressed, you cannot see the opportunities that pass you by, like all the blue cars pass you by, but you don't see them because I didn't mention it to you. So it's almost like a selective thing, but it's also yeah, I believe in, also I meditate a lot. We're so bombarded with impulses all the time that all those blue cars just pass by and you don't see them. When you actually sit in silence for a bit, or when you're about to fall asleep, or while you're under the shower, you relax and you, yeah, basically are more suitable to receive other communications or energies or just ideas that pop in your head. I think the same goes for a lot of scientists that had well-known inventions. They all came to them. You should look it up. It's all there, all that information. But makes sense to me.
Definitely, it's like the most relaxing times is where the creativity starts to flow. Like the best ideas get under the shower, during workouts, on holidays. That's when the ideas come in, and execution comes afterwards. But the ideas come in at a certain time.
And of course it doesn't mean that the ideas is amazing, but you at least get some idea where you start working on, and maybe you throw it in the.
That's why I always say, like, no matter how successful you get, you always need to schedule downtime. As in, it's good to work hard, relax hard, you know, because the relaxing part is where your creativity flows, And that will take care of the working hard part.
Yeah, it's about the flow state. Yeah, exactly. I think that's also something you can look up. The flow state is something that that really helped. Because I think that the best advice that I got from my mom, I think it was 2014 or 15. So I was going. My career was, you know, as successful as it got. And also I experienced a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
Because you... And if you're at a certain level of success, a lot of people expect a lot from you. And I'm very perfectionistic, and I like to have control on certain things. Now I'm not, because I know how it works. But you know, less control is even better to get in that flow state. But then I was struggling to make music because I couldn't be creative. So I would sit in the studio. I was like, what should I make? I have no idea what to make. And it got me so stressed that I, of course, froze. Like nothing came out of my hands anymore. And then I talked to my mom, and my mom was like, but okay, tell me how all the other tracks came about. And I was like, in the plane, going to bed, in the shower, you know, all those kind of things, or just having a walk somewhere in the forest. Yeah. And she's like, okay, so why are you stressing? You know what to do, right? Then just, you know, when try to relax a bit more. Nah. That was exactly what we're talking about right now. Best advice ever. Just relax and not stress about it. Because if you start stressing about it, you force something. And if you force something, nothing great is going to come out of your hands. For sure. Yeah,
true. Is there anything you do in your music production, like pattern, that would be weird to others?
Something that I wish I didn't do is... focusing so much on how it sounds while I'm producing.
So doing the mixing part at the same time.
I lost a lot of hours sitting in the studio having a great idea, maybe, or at least a good concept to start with. And then I start tuning it until a point that I'm tuning it for 4 or 5 hours. Then I'm completely, you know, drowned and tired and fatigued. My ears are fatigued. And then I start listening back to the first version, which sounds great. Yeah. And, you know, I had that like a million times.
Yeah.
And sometimes I still do it. So this is something that I'm working on right now. Because it's definitely not the best thing to do if you want to be efficient.
Yeah, it's not really productive.
Effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Those are the questions. We'll just keep it with that for now. Thanks again for joining, man.
For sharing. Yeah, thanks for having me.
For sharing the story for filling in for Ralph.
Yep. Someone has to do it.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. To those listening, if you're not a part of the Artist Coaching Discord yet, make sure to join the Artist Coaching Discord. There's a huge community there with, I think, over 500 people now, where we do bi-weekly Q&A sessions and talk about music all day long. So feel free to join. And next week we have the Him, as mentioned before. I have never met him before, but we'll see what type of artist he is. So yeah, see you all next week. Thanks for listening.